Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Dr. Soren Show, discussing health topics that matter to you. The views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Soren and his guest and do not represent the views of Blue Sky Broadcasting. Consult your doctor before making any changes.
Well, welcome. Today I'm interviewing Barbara O'Neill. Now, you've got a very fascinating history. You're from Australia, and you said you were initially trained as a psychiatric nurse, and you decided to, you know, take a holistic approach at treating disease before you actually get disease. So that's preventative medicine. You have a very fascinating history, so I'm really excited to delve into it. Barbara, thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So, and then you've also been, I know you lecture around the world, you've been on television programs. So and you've even received some heat, I think in Australia. Yes. There's a very interesting Wikipedia page on you. But you said your husband wrote a book called The Assassination of Barbara O'Neill, kind of describing that. So from your perspective, but I've listened to some of your lectures and your wealth of info. So thank you so much for being willing to come on and teach us about, you know, natural approach to health.
Okay. It's good. Thank you for asking me.
Thank you. So you said, just, I'm fascinated just at the beginning, you said you raised six kids, you had six kids in the rainforest in Australia. So tell me a little bit about that.
That's right. Well, I was a little bit of a nonconformist in my early 20s. And so my partner and I moved to a rainforest, and I used to look at island women, African women, and I used to think their life is so simple. Their babies are so happy. That's what I'm going to do. So not all my babies were home births, but some of them were home births. The fifth baby came a little bit early, so I delivered him myself. And I breastfed them all for several years. I think I was pregnant or breastfeeding nonstop for 14 years. But it's not long before the little ones get colds and get a little bit of a sickness. And I did not want to treat them with drugs. And so I began to investigate natural medicine. I began to investigate what were these weeds growing in my garden. I began to investigate simple water treatments. And little by little, I got an experience with the children, and I found that they responded very well. They were simple. They were effective. I was very happy with the results. And then after a few years, some of my friends watched what I was doing, and they began to inquire. It got to the point where I had a nickname in the rainforest called Earth Mother. And they'd say, if your baby's sick and you want some advice, call the Earth Mother. So that's what started to happen.
Wow, very fascinating. It's so let's just jump into talking about some of the areas that you're very passionate about. I want to first talk about one subject that I know is, I've interviewed others on this topic, but let's talk a little bit about diet, weight loss. I know you're a fan of the keto diet, and I think that's of doing the limiting the carbohydrates, especially the processed carbohydrates. So what do you feel is the ideal diet? And let's just start with that and talk about, you know, weight loss and these fad diets.
Yeah, well, I'm concerned, as probably many people are, at the size of people today and the sickness of people. And I like what Hippocrates said. He said, let food be your medicine and medicine be your food. And I'm thankful to God that at the age of 25, I became a Seventh-day Adventist. I became a Christian. And that put a new perspective on it. Then I realized that God designed this body to heal itself. And I looked at the Garden of Eden diet, which was so simple. God said, the seed, to you it shall be for meat. The seed is like the chicken's egg. The seed contains all the essential nutrients for life. And so being in the rainforest and eating food in its natural state also taught me. I believe me being in the rainforest for 12 years was almost like God putting Moses in the desert for the amount of time that he did. And then years later, when I became the health director of the retreat, I implemented the simple things that I'd learned in the rainforest, and we started to see incredible results. And I, a common email for me, say, 6 weeks after our program would be 10 kilos lost. So I guess in American terms, that would be about 20 pounds lost. And the people would say to me, it's like I'm not even on a diet. And they say, now that we're eating more food in its natural state, less of the carbohydrates, definitely no carbohydrates, and starting to explore the forgotten legume. And people also don't realise that that legume needs a soak, it needs a good rinse, and when you bring it to the boil and all the froth's on top, that's all your wind. It's got to be washed away. Now, you don't throw the water away that you cook your broccoli in, your vegetables in. That's high in minerals. But with the water that you cook your legumes in, it's high in phytic acid. You want that wind-producing substance away. So it was not only teaching the people to go back to very simple food, but it was also teaching the people to begin looking at legumes again. And a lot of people don't look at them because you've got to soak them, you've got to rinse them, you've got to cook them. So I said, well, just put them to soak before you go to bed. So I also found that I was stepping into a role as a social worker as well. So not only teaching the people a better way to eat, but showing them how they could implement it into their life. And there are little adjustments and changes depending on the person. For instance, if I'm only about 100 pounds, I'm 5'2". Now, if I went on a raw diet, within a couple of weeks, I would stand sideways and you wouldn't see me. I wouldn't go well on the raw diet. But if someone's 200 kilos, 400 pounds, well, they would go well on the raw diet. But if they have irritable bowel, they would not go well on the raw diet. So can you see there's adjustments depending on the person? But I myself aim for a 50% raw, 50% cooked, because raw delivers what cooked won't, and cooked will deliver what raw won't. And I find many extremes in the health area, and I like to be very balanced, very balanced. I like to listen to the person. I like to hear their complaints. And when you hear their complaints and hear their history, you get a little bit of an idea of where would be the best way to go. And as you make suggestions, their responses tell you, again, which way to go. So it's very much a personal suggestions to fit the person.
Yeah, and I think most people would agree that obviously eating a lot of raw food is good. I always say the closer it is to the way God made it, that's always a good thing. But like you said, the legumes, which are your beans and those types of foods, they don't go very well raw, so you need to cook those. Yeah. And you even mentioned you double cook them. Because they get a bad rap about being gas producing, but you're saying if you boil off,
that's right,
dump out the frothy water, then you get rid of some of that effect.
That's right. That's right. A lot of people don't realize that, because if you throw the water away when you cook your veggies, you're throwing the minerals away. And a lot of the people have applied that to the legumes, but it is certainly not so.
Okay, so let's talk. So you mentioned you like to go. So if somebody's close to their ideal weight, you obviously choose to go 50% raw, 50% cooked. So that obviously means eating a lot of salads and raw food, but potatoes and beans and those types of foods. Obviously, bok choy, even kale, spinach, you can boil and make dishes from those. So half there. Let's talk a little bit about carbs. Carbs get a bad rep, and is that deserved or not so?
In some ways it is. I find a lot of people, especially vegetarians, are having cereal and toast for breakfast, sandwiches for lunch, pasta for tea, sometimes cookies, donuts, mid-morning, mid-afternoon. That high carbohydrate diet is causing a lot of problems. The high carbohydrate diet, the body cannot it cannot process at all. So a lot of it has to be stored as fat, which always what happens on a high glucose diet. So and especially when people have stopped meat, they seem to stop the meat and go for the pastas and the breads and the cereals. And I say, yes, I agree to stop the meat, but go for some protein alternatives like your beans, your legumes. And tofu is fine as long as it's not been genetically modified and it's organically grown. So your whole grain carbohydrate foods like your brown rice, your millets, your quinoas, your buckwheats, you know, they're very good grains. Mm-hmm. So it's looking at it all in a balance. And also considering that wheat was hybridized in the 50s, went worldwide in the 70s, by the 1990s, just about every product made out of wheat is made out of the hybridized wheat. So I do advise people to steer away from that. You can get ancient grains, they're called, which is non-hybridized. It's called spelt and Enkenhorn. And also using the the sourdough method.
We've got to take a break, but we'll be right back with Barbara O'Neill. We're back. This is Dr. Soren, and we're talking to Barbara O'Neill. Now, Barbara had a series of talks here in Sandpoint, and you agreed to do this interview with me. It's available online. If you go to YouTube and type Barbara O'Neill and Sandpoint, and you can watch those online. But Barbara, you were talking about your favorite types of wheat. So let's just start there and then go into weight loss methods.
So the legumes, I'll get a clear throat. So your lima beans and lentils, chickpeas, black-eyed beans are a nice quick one, black turtle beans, kidney beans, cannelloni beans, they're all and barlotti beans. There's so many legumes that you can basically pick and choose. I think the easiest to digest are your red lentils. Sorry.
Okay, no problem. So you're a fan of the red lentils, because I know those are some of the overlooked fruit group. So now on the carbs, we can all agree that, although they taste great, but, you know, muffins, pizza, candy bars, all those things, we can all agree that that is a bad sugar. Those are bad carbs. But what about fruit, things that are higher in carbs like grapes or, you know, oranges, apples?
Fruit is great. But if someone has diabetes, someone wants to lose weight, someone has a yeast problem, they need to go low GI, low glycemic fruits.
Yes. So you do recommend.
So depends on the person's health status, really.
Okay. So say somebody is overweight and, like you said, is diabetic perhaps. So you do recommend taking it easy on the fruit and going heavier on the higher protein vegetables. And again, do you want to name some of those higher protein vegetables?
Again, your low GI. So your low GI vegetables are all your brassicas, so your cauliflower and broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, bok choy, and also your sweet potato and squash. I think we call it pumpkin, you call it squash. They are all much lower GIs. Your vegetables are high in fiber, high in minerals, low in sugars, whereas fruit, it's high in fiber, high in sugars and low in minerals. So for some people, depending on their health status, they're better to concentrate more on the vegetables than the fruits.
Yeah. And that makes sense. So that's where you're a fan of avoiding, you know, like you said, a high glycemic higher sugar fruits, especially if you're trying to lose weight. Now, what about juicing? Now, I heard that you're a fan of juicing, but one of the issues that I think about with juicing is you're taking all the fiber away and putting in all the sugar. What's your thought there?
That's right. Well, personally, I don't juice very much, but at our retreats, the guests juice for 2 days. So the mostly vegetable juices, and ideally they should take the place of a meal. So when you have a fast and you stop the fiber, then that's stimulating a detox in the body. So I suggest juice for a purpose. Mm. So our guests have 5 juices a day. And we find that their blood sugars all come down. Yeah. And the juices we predominantly serve are 80% apple, 10% celery, 10%. So 80% carrot, 10% apple, 10% celery. It's called the vegetarian's milk. And we find that the diabetics go very well on that juice. Sometimes we add a bit of beetroot. Sometimes we add a bit of ginger. Sometimes we add some cucumber and greens. But that carrot, celery, and apple juice, that's our main foundation for the juice. So it's not a high fruit juices.
Now, what about celery? I don't think of celery as a super high nutrition food. There are some health benefits to celery that poor celery gets overlooked.
Yeah, there certainly are. And before I left Misty Mountain, because I was the gardener all of 2020, mm-hmm. I left my staff, it must have been 3 10-foot beds full of celery, because we use a lot of celery. And the reason why we use a lot of celery, it's incredibly alkaline, and it is also an excellent kidney herb. And when you understand the benefits of celery, every tomato legume dish I cook, I always put celery in. It's a lovely alkalizer.
Really? Interesting. I need to do more research into celery.
But it's one of the most sprayed crops, so ideally always organic.
I see. Let's talk a little bit about bread too. Bread is another topic. I'm Romanian. I love bread. I could eat bread 24/7, but let's talk about why that's not good.
Well, if you can get a good bread, it is the stuff of life. So what's a good bread? A good bread would be a sourdough, because the sourdough bread is a cultured bread, and that breaks down the protein or the gluten in the grain, making it easier to digest. And all through Europe, in fact, I'm sure your grandmothers made the sourdough bread in Romania.
Yeah.
And ideally with the ancient grains, so that would be the Enkenhorn, the spelt. Another one is kamut. So I was in Germany in July, and, well, you can get very nice bread there, very nice. So I was very pleased to see that a lot of bakeries do the sourdough spelt and the sourdough rye. Rye hasn't been genetically modified. The problem was, if someone is gluten intolerant or gluten sensitive, most rye bread has a little bit of wheat in it.
Yeah.
So that's the good news, Zoran. You can eat bread.
Well, thank you. I thought I'm not allowed to eat bread. I got to feel guilty every time I eat it, right? So,
I'd like to mention a website where you can get the most beautiful sourdough bread I've made. And it's a young man, it's his family business. Okay. And it's www.simpleneeds. And needs is KNEADS.com. So, www.simpleneeds.com, and he will ship anywhere. He's in North Carolina, and he has gluten-free breads, he has ancient grain breads, and I think most people will agree, most gluten-free breads are not very nice, but this bread is outstanding.
Okay, I love it. Simple Need, K-N-E-A-D-S. So I'll have to check that out. And then
you hit
on another super hot topic, gluten. Mm-hmm. Gluten sensitivities. Why is all of a sudden everybody in the last 10, 20 years gluten sensitive when, you know, 1% of the population?
Well, there is an explanation. So when you understand that the wheat was hybridized in the 50s, now it was rushed through without any safety studies.
Mm-hmm.
And people love it because it gives 10 times, or sometimes 8, sometimes 10 times more grain per acre. So the farmers just grabbed it. It only grows about 2 foot high instead of 6 foot high. So sometimes farmers can get two crops in a season.
Mm-hmm.
But what was...
I love it.
Yeah, so it really took off. So for farmers given a choice, of course, he's going to grow the hybridized grain. He's got to pay the bills. But not only is wheat mostly grown in superphosphate soils, it's mostly grown with Roundup. So that also compounds the problem. But a lot of the flour is made into yeast bread. So the grain is not being broken down like it is in the sourdough. So can you see we've got a few factors there? There's the hybridization of the wheat, there's the way it's grown, there's also the way it's prepared.
We were talking about your favorite types of bread. Let's jump back into that.
Okay, so what do you recommend? I mean, I guess you gave me your recommendations. You rate rye, kamut, you mentioned a few other fancy ones, and then of course the sourdough. So if you're gonna eat bread, you think that's the better bread
to
eat? And I think I agree with you, you gotta limit it because it's got a lot of carbohydrates in there. And so I know you were talking a lot about focusing
It is, but the beauty of the sourdough bread is not only does it break down the protein or the gluten in the grain, it raises the protein content. And because of the way it breaks down the protein or the gluten in the grain, it also is contributing to the breakdown of yeast bread and a loaf of spelt sourdough bread, the nutritional value is a little bit different and the digestibility is markedly different.
Okay, that's very interesting, very interesting information. So let's just jump into another hot topic, which I know you covered the other day in your lectures, which is fats. Should we be afraid of eating fats, and what kind of fats do you recommend?
Well, there's a very, very good book on the subject. It's called Fats That Heal, Fats That Kill by Udo Erasmus. And I love the title because the fact is there are dangerous fats. And because there are some dangerous fats, all fats have been lumped into the same basket, which is a pity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you'll agree with me that fat makes food taste nice.
Yep.
So which are the fats that are harmful? It's the altered fats. They're your fried foods. They're your margarines where the fats have been altered. And also the polyunsaturated fats. So they would be your sunflower oils, your safflower oils. They're all extracted using heat, which damages the oil. So I suggest that we get all our polyunsaturated fats from the food we eat, our nuts and our seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And the two oils that have been used for centuries, and when I say centuries, probably since time dot, probably since almost from creation,
mm-hmm.
are the two oils that are extracted from the flesh of the plant, and that's your olive oil and your coconut oil. And what oil you ate really depended on where you lived on the planet.
So those are the two oils you recommend as the best. And I know you said to avoid, corn oil, canola oil for sure. safflower, sunflower seed oil, and stick with olive oil and coconut oil.
That's right.
And then
that's right. But even with the olive oil, you need to go for the first cold pressed, because the olive oil is also damaged by heat.
Yep.
And when you put it into your stir fry, or your lentil dish, you can do what I do. I put it in just before I serve it.
So you put it at the end so it doesn't get heated up, because I know it like increases the carcinogens and it damages the bonds, as you mentioned in your lecture. So
that's right.
The best oil is first pressed cold pressed olive oil, and then coconut oil is probably the most stable. Now, what about this thing about it being a saturated fat and we should not eat olive oil? Coconut oil. Coconut oil gets a really bad rap.
It gets a really bad rap because it's a saturated fat. So I say to people, well, what's wrong with saturated fat? And they say it causes heart disease. And I say to them, well, I'd like the proof of that, because as Dr. Malcolm Kendrick in his book, The Great Cholesterol Con, states, he said there's no proof. There's no proof that it causes heart disease. So, and another living proof that it doesn't cause heart disease is the South Pacific Islanders, who've been using and eating coconut oil every meal, you know, since time dot. And when white man first landed on those islands, they were not dying of heart disease, strokes, diabetes, and yet they ate a lot of coconut oil.
That's a great point. And you mentioned that. You know, obviously oil is high in fat, so you probably want to limit it to a certain extent, but overall you need a little bit of fat in your diet and absorption of all different kinds of minerals. So as long as you're eating healthy oils in moderation, should be okay, right?
That's right. That's right. The moderation is important because it's a very concentrated food. We're not advocating to drink half a cup of oil a day. Just a little. And also your fat-soluble vitamins, they can really only be accessed if you're eating a little bit of fat with your meal.
Thank you very much. So the ADEK, the fat-soluble vitamins, in order for your body to absorb
them, that's right,
food, you really do need to have fat, because they're fat-soluble. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about gut health. And let's just start with another hot topic, leaky gut syndrome, because we're seeing a lot of that. What are your thoughts and what can people do for that?
Yeah, these catchwords always challenge me. What is a leaky gut? Yeah. Well, when you look at our gut lining, it's made up of healthy or friendly bacteria. So Lactobacillus acidophilus, Bifidus bacterium are the two permanent bacteria in the gut. Mm-hmm. And there are many things that people are taking today that damages that. In fact, Dr. Natasha Campbell-McBride, in her book Gut and Psychology, she calls it a thick turf wall that lines our intestines. Mm-hmm. So what damages it? Antibiotics do a good job, all your statin drugs do it, your long-term painkiller use can also do it. Also, refined sugar, it can also, and alcohol, so there are different things that can damage that gut lining. So the million-dollar question is, how can you repair the leaky gut? Mm-hmm. You've got to stop everything that causes it, of course, first, and then start to implement the cultured foods. As Romanian, did you grow up with sauerkraut?
Oh, yeah. My mother used to make it in the backyard. I remember her. Put it in the sun and roll the barrel. And so I remember
that.
One of our most famous foods is sarmale, which you take rice and, and cabbage rolls. So yes, I grew up eating that.
Oh, yeah. So that sauerkraut, that cultured cabbage that produces the lactobacillus. So eating cultured foods is a great way to repopulate the gut. So that would be miso, sauerkraut, also yogurts. I was in Alabama a few weeks ago and I ate a delicious almond yogurt. It was nice and thick. So you can get coconut yogurts. You can get soy yogurts. Make sure the soy yogurt is organic and doesn't have sugar in it. So you can get some nice yogurts today.
And I know my wife has made some of those at home, and it's a lot of fun to make and fun to make with the kids. So again, to encourage gut health, you're saying eat foods that have culture in them, like these yogurts and sauerkrauts. What other things can you do to encourage the right kind of bacteria? I think more and more science is discovering how important bacteria in our gut is. So what are things that are good for your gut bacteria, and what are things that are bad for it?
Okay, now those cultured foods, of course, are great. Now, there's a lot of talk about prebiotics because prebiotics feed probiotics. Mm-hmm. And your probiotics are your cultured foods. Your prebiotics really is fiber. So especially your vegetables, they're a great source of fiber, which feeds the and encourages the healthy bacteria in the gut. So that's another way that you can do it.
Yeah, vegetables, because that's usually what I tell
people. But again, your stimulants, your drugs, your refined sugar.
Those all kill it. Oh, yeah. Talk about how processed sugar, what that does to gut health and gut bacteria. Which I know most of us eat too much.
Well, the problem with...
especially now, we're getting in the holidays. You got M&Ms everywhere and cookies and temptations everywhere.
And you know what? There's absolutely no need because God gave us beautiful honeys and maple syrups and even the coconut sugar. It's just the crystallized nectar of the palm tree. Stevia is another delightful sweetener. If someone says they don't like stevia, I say that's because you've used too much. You only need a light sprinkle of stevia and it gives a delicate sweetening. So there's really no need to go to the refined sugar. One writer said, refined sugar leaves the body better dressed than when it went in. It leaves coated with your minerals because it's so toxic. It's a pure acid that the body tries and cloaks it with some minerals to calm it down till it can get it out of your body. And that harsh acid does have a tendency to compromise the healthy bacteria in the gut. And also that refined sugar feeds yeasts like candidas. Now, everybody has candida in their gut, and there are about 12 different species of candida. And candida is not a problem when the good bacteria is in large amounts because it's kept under control. But a high amount of sugar compromises the good bacteria and feeds those yeasts. So that's another reason why it can be dangerous in the gut.
Yeah, so that's not your friend. You want to limit that. So again, the high sugar encourages, the way I think of it, the high sugar encourages the kind of bacteria that are not your friends, whereas the fiber encourages the kind of sugar,
that's right,
the kind of bacteria that is your friend. And I would say the same because I about meat, you know, being a vegetarian, I tell people, you know, imagine putting a chunk of meat at 100 degrees, you know, Celsius, 100 degrees Fahrenheit, so room body temperature, and you know, 100% humidity. Now put it in there for a day and guess what, you know, is going to happen to it is a putrefaction. So again, a high meat diet encourages...
it's nasty.
Yeah, nasty putrefaction type of bacteria, whereas the vegetables will encourage the kind of bacteria that's more friendly to your system and to your body health.
That's true.
So anything else? I'm actually don't know all that
now,
much.
Now, one more thing with gut health and...
okay.
I had nothing. One more thing with gut health and meat and sugar is clogging up the colon. Now, because sugar is such a toxic acid, it takes a lot of water. And so that contributes to constipation. And meat has no fiber at all. So that can also cause the constipation.
Very interesting. So meat and sugar, if somebody has issues with constipation, but in general, they'll clog up your system and you want to keep things flowing through your system. Very good. Just real quick, weight loss. I know there's so many topics I want to hit with you and we're running out of time. Weight loss, what are your kind of top hints for if somebody wants to lose weight, be healthier and do something permanent and sustainable, not a fad, you know, 1 month diet where you lose 10 pounds and next month you gain 20. So give us some hints on sustainable weight loss.
That's right. So we get phenomenal results with this. And it's real simple. Get the carbohydrates down. So I suggest a high fiber diet. That's all your plant foods. And lower the carbohydrate intake. And generous proteins. And healthy fats. Now, there's three foods that keep the food in the stomach longer. And that's fiber, protein, and fat. And so if you eat a substantial meal, you will not need to eat again for 6 hours. And that brings us to the time-restricted eating, which is one of the most popular ways to eat today, which is eating twice, 6 hours apart in a 24-hour period. So what we suggest is having breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, and then if you do have anything at night, it really should be maybe a vegetable juice or a herb tea. Yeah, but a lot of people I meet, they'll do 9 a.m. and 3 p.m.
Yeah, 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. And for those that don't have a regular work from home, that may be an option. But some of the other people that kind of get have to work 8 to 12 and then 1 to 5, that may be a little more challenging. Now, tell me about this. Yeah. Evening. You talked about an evening kind of broth. It sounds like no calorie and low calorie, but it does have minerals. Tell me about how you make that.
Yeah, we do that with our guests. And absolutely, there are students and there are people who have to have the breakfast at 7 and maybe their lunch at 12. If they can be a little bit more substantial, then the evening can be a little bit lighter. And if it's a young man who doesn't want to lose his muscle, he might have a smoothie. Mm-hmm. But another option is soup, and it could have vegetables in it and be a bit more substantial if the person's really hungry. But if they want to stay really light at night, then the broth is an excellent option. So, and what we do is we cook a whole lot of vegetables in water for about 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And that's on a low heat, and then we strain it and then add some Celtic salt, and it's delicious.
Well, these are all fun things. And actually, last night you mentioned one other thing in your talk that I found interesting, which is if somebody wants to lose weight, I think you mentioned kind of a chia seed shake or something like that, which is basically adding fiber. So you kind of, which when, you know, it mixes with your stomach juices, it expands in your stomach. I've heard that as a way to help yourself less at mealtime. Did I understand correctly?
Well, a lot of people I find today, it's everything's fast, fast, fast. Mm-hmm. So they want a fast breakfast. So an excellent fast breakfast is a smoothie. And so you want in your smoothie, you want high fiber, you want generous protein, and you want some great fats. So to achieve that in your smoothie, you could make your smoothie on coconut water or... And I also advise a protein powder. So the protein powder might be a hemp protein, might be a pea protein, brown rice protein. You've just got to look and make sure there's no sugar. And then, excuse me, for the fiber, you throw some blueberries in, some can handle the, you know, a high glycemic, they might add fiber in. And then for the fats, chia seed. So even about 4 teaspoons of chia seed, also some ground flaxseed. And as you blend it, it gets thicker and thicker. So chia seed, when it's put with fluid, it can start gelling within about 5 minutes.
Well, Barbara, that's all the time we have here today. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, we've got the full interview. This has had to be clipped back a little bit for the radio. It's on the Dr. Soren Show on YouTube with Barbara O'Neill. So please check that out if you want to hear the full interview. Lots of info, very fascinating. Barbara, thank you so much.